Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Caritas. Today is October 28th, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's podcast is Markets March Higher. We have the S&P closing at an all-time high. We're going to get to the market analysis here, obviously, here shortly. But before I get started, I just want to let everybody know that I am changing the numbering of my podcasts. The last episode would have been episode 131. B. This is going to be episode 263 because that would be its natural progression. For those of you who have been with me since the beginning of this podcast back in February of this year, I was doing two podcasts per evening. Episode A would pertain to geopolitics and episode B would pertain to global markets and global finance. As you're mainly aware now, over the recent past, I have been doing one podcast an evening, but have still been numbering them the same. However, we are doing a higher volume of videos, which I enjoy doing. I like doing one podcast, and I like putting a video out there. Hopefully, I can keep it up to one a week, maybe start getting that up a little bit more frequently as well. I enjoy doing them, and I think it helps. Hopefully, it helps you guys as well, because I throw a lot of numbers out there, I throw a lot of data out there, and it's one thing to listen to it, it's another thing to actually see it and follow along. So I want to make sure that this audience not only hears it, but has the opportunity to see what I'm looking at, and to make your own judgment and analysis for yourselves as well, and to take that data, because it's open source, I cite where it comes from, you can go and easily find it as well, and conduct your own analysis to arrive at your own opinions. So that's what I'm going to continue to do. So if you're seeing a huge jump in the number in the episode, that is why I'm changing it, because we're just going to stick with doing one an evening and hopefully get a higher volume of videos on our website, The Capital News, and out there on our YouTube channel at The Capital News as well. And I appreciate all of you who have been with me since February and those who have joined since. And I hope you're enjoying both the podcasts and the videos. And keep up the comments. We love hearing them. So the S&P was up 17 points to close at a record high of 3,039 points. It was slightly higher during intraday trading, but it closed at an all-time high again at 3,039 points. The Dow rose 133 points, a gain of 0.5%. The NASDAQ gained 83, an increase of 1% for the day. And the Russell 2000, the small cap index, gained 13 points, an increase of 0.85%. The Dow Jones Transports was down ever so slightly, let's call it flat for the day. And the New York Stock Exchange gained 0.3%. Of 1%. Despite the fact that you have an apparent risk-on rally, thinking that everything is going to be A-OK with the markets, that the global economy is going to avert disaster, that it's going to avert a global recession, and with further tweets and statements coming out in regards to the U.S.-China trade talks, oil actually sold off today. So I don't, that's a little bit of a head scratcher there, but you know, one day doesn't make a trend. We'll see if that reverses. But we have WTI trading at $55.70 a barrel. Brent, the international metric, is at $61.50 a barrel. However, a little bit more in agreement with a risk on trade going into global equities. We had a little bit of a pullback with the precious metals. Gold is now trading at $1,492 an ounce, so a pullback below that $1,500 an ounce mark that we're paying attention to. Silver also pulled back and is now again below $18 an ounce, trading at $17.84 per ounce. U.S. 10-year Treasury also selling off due to the risk-on appetite that is all of a sudden back in the game. And we have Uncle Sam's 10-year now yielding 1.85%. So we're going to continue to monitor this. I imagine if global interest rates continue to decline and the Federal Reserve, the ECB, the Bank of Japan in particular, continue their easing, continue their quantitative easing, I'm not going to be surprised if we see the 10-year start to reverse course once again and head lower, nearing 1%, if not to 0% in the not-too-distant future. Because remember, we have a presidential election next year. It will be in full swing in a couple of months. Donny Boy Thunder Thumbs loves low interest rates. He wants negative interest rates and he loves quantitative easing. Although you don't hear him patting Jay Powell and the Federal Reserve on the back for cutting interest rates like he's told them to do, nor has he made any comment of quantitative easing starting up again. So the silence is sort of deafening, isn't it? And we have the VIX, the Volatility Index, despite the markets making an all-time high in regards to the S&P 500. The VIX, it's a little hesitant, might not trust this right now, and it actually gained. You would anticipate that the VIX would have fallen a little bit. It did not. It rose 3.6% today and is now trading at $13.11. So we'll continue to monitor that as well. And in that same vein of the volatility index, I know last week I said we're going to update the volatility model, and we were maybe going to talk about that on the week ahead segment. There was so much to discuss yesterday. I did not discuss that, but we are going to briefly discuss the volatility model here just to keep you guys informed, because I do believe that the volatility model holds water, and if it continues to hold water for the remaining portion of this year, which we only have 2 months left in this year, if you can believe it, 2019 is winding down very, very quickly. Before you know it, it's going to be Thanksgiving, and before that, it's going to be Christmas. So are we going to see a repeat of last year? Well, we might, but to what side? Will it be a melt up or will it be a melt down? Now, of course, there's that third option where it just continues to be range bound. But we're gonna mention this because there's some interesting things that continue to develop in our volatility model. I wish I could tell you which way it's going to go, but that's not what this model is programmed to do. It's just going to tell us whether or not there is volatility. And so far, it's been holding water throughout this year, and I'm still banking on it for the remainder of 2019. So we'll get to that. Some other stories I want to talk about is Thunder Thumbs tweeting pretty much automatically. He was sitting in front of the television for quite a bit today, waiting for the S&P 500 or the Dow or the NASDAQ. Somebody, please, somebody make a new all-time high. So I don't know what U.S. business he was dealing with as the president, but he was most definitely watching TV. So if you weren't watching TV, but you were on your Twitter feed, you were informed by Thunder Thumbs that this S&P 500 hit an all-time high. So he is obsessed with this. And to sort of give the market an additional push to make sure it got there today, there were some other tweets and statements out today that the U.S.-China trade talk and this partial agreement within phase one, I mean, I can't make up this rhetoric. I couldn't. It's ahead of schedule. It's ahead of schedule. I couldn't make that up if my life depended on it either. Ahead of schedule, it's been 2 years. You told me that this was an easy thing to do, that trade wars were easy to win. It's now 2 years later, and you're now telling me it's ahead of schedule? Well, all right. There's that argument that it's 2 years on. So is that ahead of schedule? Or are you talking about the actual signing ceremony that's going to take place between Donny Boy and President Xi down in Chile next month? If it's ahead of schedule, does that mean you're going to sign it before that meeting? Are you going to fly to Beijing? Is Xi going to fly to Washington? You going to meet somewhere else? Because that's what ahead of schedule would mean, that it's going to be completed before originally thought. He should know, excuse me, he should know this. He's in the real estate business and pats himself on the back for saying, I come in under budget and I come in ahead of schedule. Well, that means if you were anticipating a completion date by December, you would get it done before December. So if you're ahead of schedule, you have to sign this thing before the meeting in Chile next month. Actually, it's only a few weeks away. So that makes no sense whatsoever, except unless you follow this podcast and understand that this is open and blatant market manipulation. Let's juice this thing to make an all-time high so I can sit here watching Fox Business or CNBC or Bloomberg, whichever one he was watching, probably Fox Business, and saying, here we go. We're up there. This is the Trump economy. It's the best ever. Of course, you know it isn't with all the data that we discuss here and the presentations that we put on there. It's in your face. This is not. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter to Donny Boy Thunder Thumbs. Does not matter to this market either, because it continues to march onward and upward. Not good, and it's quite frightening, to be perfectly honest with you. I could be off my rocker and I could be completely wrong. I could prove to be completely wrong. But let me tell you something. If there is a melt-up situation, I think that's going to be very dangerous for the mentality of this market. It's going to be very dangerous for the vast majority of Americans, because when you have a melt-up situation, and history supports this, the subsequent correction will be a crash. People will not be prepared for that. It will be devastating. You had a melt-up, a blow-off top, if you will, melt-up during the dot-com era, okay? This was fueled by the Federal Reserve, once again coming to the rescue, because God forbid stock prices should find where they actually belong. And you had a blow-off top. And then over the course of two years, you lost 80%. The NASDAQ came back 80%. And a lot of it happens at the drop of a hat. You know, you lose 20, 30, maybe even 40% before you can call up your broker and say, get me out, because you don't know what's going to happen. Is it just a little bit of a correction? Is it going to be a very sharp V-shaped recovery like we saw at the end of last year, beginning of this year? You don't know. And your broker's going to say, no, you got to stay invested. You got to stay invested. The market goes up, market goes down, yada, yada, yada. You're not going to know. They're not going to know. I'm not going to know. That's why you have to be diversified. But all I can tell you is the higher this thing goes, the bigger the crash will be. That's logical. That's what history tells us. So Thunder Thumbs was all about it, but still can't give us any definitive answer on when this trade deal is actually going to take place. Nancy Pelosi came out to announce that the House will vote this Thursday on the procedures as we make our way forward in this impeachment inquiry, calling for due process and calling for open public hearings. Now, maybe, I know my audience isn't that big yet, but maybe Nancy Pelosi got wind of what we were talking about here on the Capitol News just yesterday. Because we stated yesterday, if the Democrats do not proceed with open hearings to make it known what Donald Trump and his administration have done and have not done, this will be an abomination to our republic. It'll be a sham. It'll be a scam. And all of the political stunts that have been orchestrated by the Republicans will be warranted moving forward. And again, last night I said those won't be stunts moving forward if the Democrats should block public hearings. Well, it appears that they're going to vote to have public hearings and to lay the groundwork for due process, what the president and his legal team are going to be able to do during this impeachment inquiry as we make our way forward. So I hope this happens for the sanctity and for the sanity of our republic, because that's how important this is, because impeachment is not a joke. It is something serious. It is very serious. That's why it's been done so few times over the course of this republic's history. So you got to do it right. You have to be fair, but you also have to understand the process that what we've been witnessing is a grand jury. You do not have microphones and cameras in the grand jury. It's a secret process. That's what takes place. You have Democrats in there. You have Republicans in there. And I stress that importantly because these Republicans want to come out and say, no, no, we're not involved. We have no idea what's going on. That's a bunch of baloney. Members of those committees are in those depositions. They can ask questions. That's how it is. And now it's going to become public to the broader House, to, I believe it, the natural transition will be to the Judiciary Committee. Of course, that could be a circus with Jerry Nadler as the chairman. We all know this. But nevertheless, it will be public. Democrats, Republicans alike will be able to ask questions of the various witnesses that will come forward, and the Trump administration will be able to make their legal argument as well to some degree. So stay tuned for that. We'll get more details hopefully later this week on Thursday, and hopefully that gets passed so this can be as transparent as possible. Further in regards to this impeachment inquiry, we have the U.S. ambassador to the European Union, Sondland. He is now saying, this is according to the Wall Street Journal, he is now saying that there was a quid pro quo. Before he was saying, no, there was no quid pro quo. Now, according to reporting from the Wall Street Journal, U.S. Ambassador to the European Union, Sondland, is saying that there was a quid pro quo. Now, this is interesting. This is very interesting. Because, first off, Ukraine is not in the European Union. So, why is Ambassador Sondland even involved with this at all? Another interesting thing, and this isn't anything to raise your eyebrow at, but it is something to sort of keep in the back of your mind. Ambassador Sondland is not a career diplomat. He is basically a political appointee, okay? There are some members, obviously, within the State Department who are career diplomats. They make their way up the corps, and that's what they do. They might obviously be specialists, maybe in economic affairs, maybe political affairs, whatever the case may be, and obviously have different backgrounds, maybe different language skills, and different expertise in a respective country or territory, okay? And so those people might move themselves up the ranks. A new president is elected. They go through. They see, okay, who should be promoted, this, that, or the other. And you might have those career professionals making their way to different ambassadorships. Well, The other case is you have political appointments, and these are typically people who are big political donors to an individual who becomes the president of the United States. Well, Ambassador Sondland was one such character. He is not a career diplomat. He is a big donor of the Trump campaign, and he was awarded for that contribution, that donation, with this ambassadorship. So that's another thing, again, to keep in the back of your mind. This is common. This isn't corrupt. This isn't anything like that. You have different degrees as to what presidents are going to do. Some presidents might put a lot more political appointees in those positions. Others might say, nah, I'd rather not do that. I don't like the way that looks. I'd rather promote from within with people who have that expertise, and then we'll just move forward. So again, nothing to raise your eyebrow, but something to sort of keep in the back of your mind, because this is not a career diplomat. This is somebody who does have a political affiliation with Donald Trump. So just keep that in the back of your mind, because we're going to see how this plays out, because you never know who's talking to who behind the scenes. Where's this guy's loyalty? And that becomes the question, because Donald Trump loves loyalty. He pretty much demands it, whether or not he deserves it or not. He demands it of the people within the White House, and I think that's pretty evident. There was an interview with General John Kelly, the former Secretary of Homeland Security and the former Chief of Staff. Yes, Chief of Staff to President Trump. He's been gone already out of the White House, I think almost a year already, if you can believe it. It's been that long since he left the White House. And he is pretty much quoted saying that he knew that what is taking place now was likely going to take place, that an impeachment inquiry was likely going to take place, because the president, his instincts on some of these conversations with foreign leaders can really go off the beaten trail and say the things that he said during that call, which can be construed as a quid pro quo. The question becomes, you know, is that par for the course? Does everybody do it? And just because everybody doesn't excuse it. But does that rise to an impeachable offense? Because again, impeachment is a very, very serious matter. The American people voted for that president, for our president. I voted for him. I'm not too happy with that vote, but that's the case. General Kelly warned about this. And according to him in the interview, he warned Donald Trump himself. He said, look, you have to make sure that you have a tight ship in here. You cannot have a yes man, because the former chief of staff before General Kelly was Reince Priebus, and he seemed to me like a yes man, pretty much a pushover. That's when you had all the leaks taking place within the White House. They got rid of him. They needed a little bit more order, because a whole bunch of people were just walking in and out of the Oval Office, according to various reports. You put General Kelly in there, a four-star Marine general. He says, no, not on my watch. Bring some order to the Oval Office. Bring some structure to Donald Trump, keeps him a little bit more on the, I guess, straight and narrow, if you will, as much as you can with Donald Trump, and then warned that you cannot hire a yes man to this position. Well, I do think that the acting chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, is more of a yes man. And look, the guy is wearing two hats. He is the director of office management and budget, which is a huge job and responsibility in and of itself, and he's also the acting chief of staff to Donald Trump. So those are huge responsibilities. So it's a lot easier just to say, yes, Mr. President, good job, Mr. President, as opposed to really standing your ground and really giving some concrete advice that may counter Mr. Trump. So according to John Kelly, he's not surprised by what's taking place. Donald Trump fires back. He never said this to me. If he said that to me, I would have thrown him out of the office myself. And then you have the press secretary, Stephanie Grisham, coming out and saying, I used to work with General Kelly, and he's not equipped. He's not equipped to handle the genius of the president. I'm not making this up. Not equipped to handle the genius of the president. Talk about blind loyalty or just stupidity. Are you kidding me? What genius calls himself a genius? Have you ever heard this? You think Isaac Newton called himself a genius? How many times do you think Einstein called himself a genius? You know Neil deGrasse Tyson, you're probably familiar with him. You see him on a lot of television shows, the astrophysicist. How many times do you think he calls himself a genius? Elon Musk, whole host of people. Who does this? Okay? So this is the blind loyalty that exists. And this woman calling a decorated four-star general of the United States Marine Corps, saying that he is not equipped to handle the genius of the president, that is insulting. This woman needs to go. Not that you really ever see her, because there are no daily press briefings. So this is what you have. You want to say that this is the most transparent administration ever, yet you don't have daily press briefings. And you got this woman insulting a four-star United States Marine general. That to me is shameful. And he served the president admirably and loyally. I mean, he left. He had some disagreements on character and on policy. That happens. People leave. You don't have to make such comments, and then to make such an outlandish comment that he's not equipped to handle the genius of the president. That's beyond me, but whatever. Where are we with this now? Volatility model. Let's wrap this thing up with the volatility model. So those of you who have been with me, the volatility model tracks the daily movements within the major indexes, the Dow, the Russell 2000, the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ. And how I define volatility is a move of plus 1% or greater, or negative 1% or less than. Okay, anything in between I do not consider volatile. Now, of course, there are other definitions that would consider that volatile, but for the purpose of my model, no, I don't do that. Okay, so if we're looking at the NASDAQ, what we should witness for the remainder of this year, and again, we only have 2 months to go, if this holds true, and I have every reason to believe that it will, that over the remaining 2 months, the NASDAQ will have about, two volatile days per week. And that is just to maintain trend. Now, again, there's no reason that this thing couldn't go below trend, so there's less volatility, and there's no reason to say that this thing couldn't spike and go above trend. But if we were to sort of repeat where we were last year, which is what the volatility model says to me as I am interpreting it, is for the NASDAQ, we're going to see two volatile days per week until the end of the year. Time will tell. When it comes to the Dow, this is a little bit bigger. We have about, we got a difference here between last year and this year of about 30. So you're talking about 3 to 4 days per week of volatility till the end of the year for the Dow Jones Industrial Average. That would be highly, highly reminiscent of last year. So again, like I said at the top of this podcast, there is the possibility for a repeat when it comes to the volatility of last year. To what degree, in what direction, remains to be seen. But if history is an indicator, it tends to go to the downside. But if this does prove to be some sort of blow-off top, and we do get strong, let's say, consumer shopping for the holiday season, and we get a Santa rally, and we get some sort of BS trade deal that everybody thinks is fantastic, then you could have a massive rally at the end of the year. So that is something to be mindful of. But we're going to have 3 to 4 days per week, according to our model, on the Dow. And don't think it can't happen, because it happened last year. When it comes to the S&P 500, we're looking at the same thing, which these two have tracked pretty well together, the Dow and the S&P 500. And that makes sense. Those are the biggest companies out there. So that is going to be the same thing, a continuation of 3 to 4 days for the S&P 500 as well. When it comes to the Russell 2000, the small cap index, like we have been saying throughout this year, it has been trending very, very well with our volatility model and remains on par pretty much for the remainder of this year for one volatile day per week, till the end of the year. And that is just to get back to trend, to where we were last year. It's anybody's guess. We have everything and the kitchen sink being thrown at this market. The Federal Reserve, again, intervening and interfering and distorting markets on an overnight basis. And a lot of the markets, if you're paying attention, you look at the futures trading and the overnight trading. Surprise, surprise, overnight. The Federal Reserve is tinkering in the overnight markets, and the futures markets with these indexes are skyrocketing. And they open up massively to the upside, and that's sort of just where they maintain throughout the trading session. So there's some funny business going on behind the scenes in this overnight market. Believe me when I tell you, $120 billion a night and we have no idea where it's going. Pay attention to the markets. I think we have an idea as to where it's making its way through. So this is bought and paid for. This is criminal. This is fraud. But these markets don't care. And Thunder Thumbs doesn't care. And Congress doesn't care. They might all be in on it. I don't know. I don't want to go get conspiratorial, but that's the skeptic and the cynic in me, that you cannot continue to have this decoupling of fundamental global economic data continuing to deteriorate, a lot of it with no sign of subsiding, and markets continuing to march higher and higher. But again, that is on the back of everything in the kitchen sink being thrown at. We have the Federal Reserve meeting tomorrow and Wednesday. That decision will be made on Wednesday. All likelihood, they're going to cut interest rates by at least 25 basis points. And another reason for them to cut interest rates another 25 basis points, despite having lower inflation, which is price stability, despite having unemployment at 50-year lows, there was further deterioration from the Federal Reserve's banks of Dallas and Chicago, with those reports coming out, with further deterioration for those regions. So that's going to give them a little bit of cover if they want to say, oh, well, there's further deterioration in the Dallas numbers and in the Chicago banks numbers. So yeah, we're going to have to cut one more time. And we've been down this path before with Thunder Thumbs. Of course, they're not going to call him Thunder Thumbs, although I would love that. They'll say, well, Donald Trump, yeah, we have all these tweets and statements of there being a trade deal, but we've been told this before, so we're going to continue to cut one more time and see what happens. Now, the market, again, is pricing in basically a 96% chance that they are going to cut interest rates by 25 basis points come Wednesday. So they're not going to disappoint Wall Street. The addicts want their crack, and they're going to get it. And then you also have quantitative easing, but we're not supposed to call it that, to the tune of $60 billion a month. So you have all of this massive injections of liquidity. You have the ECB that's going to start their official, they're not afraid to say it, quantitative easing process once again at the start of November. So you're just going to have money printing all over the place. So this the markets can catch a bid. A melt-up, a blow-off top is not out of the picture. I just think it's going to be extremely detrimental when the crash happens because people are not going to be prepared for it because they're just going to be so high on the profits they made and thinking that this thing can't go down, and Thunder Thumbs is going to keep talking it up like it's the best thing since sliced bread. Well, you go back and you look at 1929, you go back and you look at 2000, and you tell me how good those corrections were, and you think you're smart enough to time it and get out of there before you lose 40, 50%. You're not. So I'm going to tell you the truth. The president's not going to tell you the truth. His administration's not going to tell you the truth. Jay Powell and the Federal Reserve aren't going to tell you the truth. I'm going to do my best to tell you the truth and at least warn you, at least give that idea to you, because that's not even discussed on the financial mainstream media or Fox Business, anywhere. Fox News, CNN, they're not going to tell you this stuff. So you have to be educated. You got to stay with the Capital News. So everything in the kitchen sink's being thrown at these markets. They continue to go higher. Bad news is great news, and if it continues, it's anybody's game. But please, ladies and gentlemen, continue to follow us here at the Capital News. Continue to watch our videos. Again, you can find them on our website, thecapitalnews.com, or on our YouTube channel, The Capital News. Thank you so much for joining me. Please like, share, subscribe, get the word out, and leave your comments. We do love hearing from you. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with The Capital News. I am Alex Kritis. Godspeed.